The Icelandic writer Sjón made waves a few years ago when translations of three of his novels were published simultaneously in this country. He's also known for his collaborations with Björk, for whom he has written many songs, and they've also performed together. And actually, we're listening to a performance with Luftgitar and the Sugar Cubes. His latest novel, Moonstone, The Boy Who Never Was, is about 16-year-old Mani Stein, who barely survives the Spanish flu epidemic that devastated Reykjavik in 1918. The novel swept the Icelandic Literary Awards and has just been published here by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. I'm very pleased that it has brought Sjón back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you.
All of your novels, at least the ones that have been published here, take place in another era or at other times in Icelandic history. Why did you want to write about the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic?
Well, I think the main reason I choose historical material is that when you tell stories from the past, they automatically get like a fable quality. They become sort of fables, and you can read into them, and you can read your own times into them. Sometimes when you write about your own times, the reader instantly starts having an argument with you. Mm. You know, oh, no, it wasn't like that, or no, it's not like that. But with a story from the past, the author is in command, and we can start the literary game of reading into things.
And, of course, there's the Scandinavian tradition of the sagas and et cetera.
Yes, we come from a history of writing historical novels.
Although the Spanish flu isn't one of the... doesn't seem like the right kind of source material for an Icelandic saga. But wasn't this at a particularly historic time for Iceland, 1918?
Yes, and those weeks in the autumn of 1918 were amazing in Icelandic history. Because, yes, you had the Spanish flu coming to Reykjavik, but 2 weeks earlier, the volcano Katla started erupting and showering the town with gray ash. And during the same weeks, we were in the final negotiations with Denmark about our sovereign status. So on the 1st of December, we became a sovereign country. So a volcanic eruption, an epidemic, and independence, this was a perfect setting for a novel.
And World War One was coming to an end around this time. Was that something that was... felt distant in Iceland?
Yes, Iceland wasn't touched by the First World War in any way, really. And I see the advent of the Spanish flu in the very last weeks of the First World War as an ironic case of a small country that believes it's safe from everything, that it is north of war, being hooked into the global narrative at the last time. Because, of course, the Spanish flu grew out of the horrible situation in the killing fields of Europe, and then it came to our small country and involved us in that big story.
A country where almost everybody seemed to know everybody, you would think that actually would be ripe for the Spanish flu.
Yes, it was a town of 15,000 people.
That Reykjavik was that small?
It was that small, 15,000 people, and we still called it a capital, you know? But out of those 15,000 people, 10,000 people fell horribly ill, hundreds died. And it was very difficult to contain the epidemic in the beginning because, as you say, people were so close.
And your protagonist here goes to movie theaters when he isn't engaging in other kinds of activities, which we will discuss in a moment. Movie theaters actually became a place where the flu would spread.
Yes.
Were they very popular in Iceland? What kinds of movies would he have seen?
Yeah, you know, it's a beautiful story, I think. There were two cinemas in Reykjavik in 1918. And right from the beginning of feature films, you know, let's say 1913, Icelanders became fascinated with this new art form. So you had two cinemas in this town of 15,000 people, great attendance, and they were showing all the great movies of the day.
From Hollywood and from Europe.
From Hollywood and from Europe. At the time, Denmark was actually a global force in cinema. Those are the days of the silent cinema.
Carl Dreyer and people like that.
Carl Dreyer and so all of this came to Iceland. And the beauty is that this was the art form of the underprivileged. This was the art form of the poor, of the kids, you know. While the fine people of Reykjavik went to the theater and watched outdated living room dramas, the kids and the outcasts of Reykjavik, they were watching the birth of a new art form, an art form that would dominate the 20th century.
Are people in Iceland familiar with this history, or have you been told that they're learning things they didn't know by reading your book?
Yes, actually, I think the research I did for the book broke some ground, because the general idea in Iceland was that it was the Second World War that brought cinema to Iceland. You know, with the whole Marshall Plan. You know, involving exportation of American films to Europe and all that. So all of us have ideas about American films dominating Icelandic culture after the Second World War. But I discovered that we actually had this amazing, thriving cinema culture in those very early days of cinema.
My guest is Sjón, who is an award-winning novelist, poet, and playwright. And his latest book, the one we are discussing, is called Moonstone, The Boy Who Never Was. It is published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. Moonstone is the name of the English translation of the name of your protagonist here. Would the book in Icelandic be called Mánastein?
No, it's actually called Mánastein, which is also the stone. Uh-huh. So I'm playing with it on many levels and in many languages.
The book opens with a graphic sex scene as Mánastein services an older gentleman. Why did you want to start the story with such a shocking scene?
Well, once I decided or discovered that the main character was this queer kid, you know, who was trying to survive in the town of Reykjavik in 1918.
As a hustler.
I just thought, you know, let's get that over with, you know. Let's get over with, let's just bring the reader absolutely as close to what he's doing as possible, and then we're done with that. Then we can continue and we can start discovering him as a person, as a real character.
Since Reykjavik was such a small city, small almost town, would it have had a thriving gay scene?
Not a thriving one, but a very secret one, as you see in the book. I mean, there are no. I mean, he is a travesty in this town when they discover what he's doing. But another reason for starting with this very graphic close encounter between two bodies also served as a stepping stone towards what happens in the Spanish flu, when all physical contact, of course, becomes poisonous.
While he is with his gentleman, he is constantly on the lookout for a young girl, Sola G. So is Money actually gay, or is this just a way for him to make a living?
I think he's what we would call today queer, you know. In those days, people didn't have those definitions. Nobody was homosexual. The word homosexual only existed as a medical term. So he practically doesn't know what he is, you know. He just has he has feelings for this girl. He idolizes her, you know. She's a diva, and in a way he wants to be more like her than like himself. So he's a queer kid, and you would not say gay or whatever, you know.
He lives in his head, and he keeps on seeing her in the movies that he's watching. But he's also an orphan who lives with his great aunt in the attic of a house. What happened to his parents and his grandparents? Did he have no other relatives?
Well, at the very end of the book, I reveal where he comes from. and I think it's okay to say it here. He lost his mother to leprosy. And
was that something that happened much in Iceland at
well,
the time?
Well, actually, my great-grandfather died of leprosy in 1929. So it was going on for a long time in Iceland. So he's a kid that, you know, he's been orphaned. He's been thrown out of his county. He's come to Reykjavik. He lives in the leper hospital for a while before being put into custody of this very old lady. And then he's just trying to survive. And for me, it was very important to put a character like this into this grand historical situation. When you have historical circumstances where you have the Spanish flu, a country getting a sovereign status, a volcanic eruption, the First World War, you need a character who in a way doesn't care about it at all.
How did you research this? Is all of this covered in old newspapers?
A lot I got from the newspapers. I started working on this novel 15, 16 years ago. And actually, the starting point for the novel was a picture of a woman who I base Sola G, the girl he idolizes, on. And that woman, she was the first professional driver in Iceland and a very special lady. So I started 15, 16 years ago. I just started gathering everything I could put my hands on that related to the Spanish flu. And then out of that, I became interested in digging up everything I could on the Days of Silent Cinema and then the history of queerness. And one day I realized it all belonged in the same novel.
Let's talk a bit about names. Your full name is Sigurjón Birger Sigurðarson. Is Sion a short version of your first name?
Yes. Sion is an abbreviation of Sigurjón. I started very early. As a writer. I published my first book in the summer. I turned 16, so the same age as the main character of this novel.
And you published poetry.
Yes, I started as a poet. And, it was, of course, a strange idea for a 16-year-old kid from the suburbs to publish a novel, book of poetry. So I thought, let's put a little mask on, and this abbreviation of my name means vision. So I became Sion.
Well, we have Björk as well, one name. Is the population of Iceland small enough so everybody can have a unique first name?
No, not really. Today there's 330,000 of us, but I think if we tried, we might be able to do it. It's a good idea. I'll bring it back.
This novel was translated by Victoria Cribb, who also translated your three other novels that have been published here, The Blue Fox, The Whispering Muse, and From the Mouth of the Whale. Was it difficult to find the right translator because, Icelandic is an odd language and you write in a very poetic way?
Yes. There are not many people who translate from Icelandic into other languages. Still, you can find a translator into a great number of languages.
Well, there was a Nobel Prize winner from Iceland, Halldór Laxness.
Yes.
And she was translated.
He was translated. He was translated and is still available in many languages. But with Victoria, I was just incredibly fortunate that we found each other, because in each of my books, I work with a different vocabulary, you can say. So in From the Mouth of the Whale, I was working with the language of the 17th century Iceland. In this book, I'm obviously working with the language of early 20th century Iceland. And she's just a magician. She captures it all.
Well, does it help that you speak English well? You lived in London for a time.
Yes. I can read. I can read the translations, and I can have an opinion on Victoria's translations. But she's just so good that I put all my trust in her, and the text is her text. She recreates the text beautifully.
I mentioned that you are a poet, a playwright, a novelist, but you also write music. When did you start writing songs?
Well, I've been involved in music for a very long time, When I was a teenager, the whole punk new wave thing happened, and we, that is me and my friends, we were swept up in it, and people started, you know, forming bands and writing music, putting out cassettes and singles, and there was a thriving music scene in Reykjavik. I mainly came to music as a wordsmith, you know, so I write the lyrics. And
nominated for an Oscar for your lyrics.
Oh, yes.
For Dance in the Dark.
Yes. Who would have guessed that that experiments in bedrooms and garages in Reykjavik would lead you to the red carpet in Los Angeles? Yeah, no, music is a very big part of my life. My wife, Ásgerður Júníusdóttir, she's a mezzo-soprano and takes part in contemporary opera all the time. So I have written librettos and lyrics, and I just enjoy it when music and words come together.
And you have another name when you perform, Johnny Triumph?
Yes, Johnny Triumph. Johnny Triumph was this rock god who performed occasionally with the Sugar Cubes. And I performed here in 1989 at the Ritz with two of my old idols, David Bowie and Iggy Pop, in the audience. So that was a privilege, also for a kid from the suburbs of Reykjavik.
Sheehan's latest novel is called Moonstone, The Boy Who Never Was. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And we're going to go out with Björk singing Oceania, a song that you wrote for her, or with her.
Yes. We wrote this song for the opening ceremony of the Olympics in Athens in 2004. And to be asked to write words for the Olympics in Greece was, of course, a dream come true.
Thank you so much for being on our show. Let's listen to a little of the song.
Away from Mother Oceania.